something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak we roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard and the use them.
Want to take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Absolutely the most loved and hated guest on this program. I mean, people are absolutely passionate about Major Ed Ames, but even his most severe critics listen to every single word he says. He's a very controversial man, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. And certainly he was that. I have read his entire military record. Other remote viewers have referred to Ed many times. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting group, the technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise Paula Wagner production. Ed coached Sir Ben Kingsley, who played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. Again, the most loved and hated guest we have on this program, Major Ed Dames. You know what? Just before we break, let me serve up the usual warning. A lot of the material that you're about to hear is going to potentially be very disturbing. And so rather than have you become disturbed, unable to sleep or have bad dreams, you should turn off the radio now. Again, a warning, children ought not be listening to this. I would think that their parents should exercise parental control and take that radio away from them. Even the parents, some of them, ought not hear some of the material we're going to discuss. He's controversial for a reason. His nickname is Dr. Doom. And that, too, is for a good reason. Extremely controversial, and right here, in a moment. Radio. Something we're going to touch on with Ed shortly is very disturbing indeed. You may recall last week, and or perhaps even this week, if you heard the pre-play, that is to say the show that ran before this one, I believe it was the EVP show, electronic voice phenomena, you know, voices from wherever. Well, Ed is going to comment on the little child's voice, the origin of the child's voice, and on EVP itself. So, in other words, he's done some sort of remote viewing on the subject. I'm very much looking forward to that. But first, there was And a second Indonesian area earthquake, a very, very large earthquake. Fortunately, no tsunami associated with it. But when it occurred, I noticed the website at coasttocoastam.com put up a headline saying, talking about the quake and saying, Ed Dames hit, question mark. And indeed, Ed, on the last program, predicted another really major quake in that area, albeit perhaps a couple thousand miles from where it actually happened. But in magnitude and so forth, very, very close, Ed. So you answer the question. I mean, the headline was Ed Dames hit, question mark. Was it an Ed Dames hit?
Good evening, Art. It, I think that it was a hit, and we're getting better. It's been 21 years, and this skill and the science behind it is evolving. So you're going to see me stick my neck out more and more, but I'm not really sticking my neck out. We've actually discovered some ways of placing coordinates, Cartesian coordinates, and dates on events. In fact, I have another very serious event predicted, and I have a map on your Coast to Coast website showing Mount Tarawera in the North Island in New Zealand.
Okay, I'm going to navigate to the website like about a billion other people right now. I would say, no matter what, certainly your last prediction was close enough in most respects that I think I would certainly consider it a hit.
We knew it would be Indonesia, but getting the exact coordinates down, the latitude, as you see, the latitude is very precise.
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's not difficult for us to do, and it does not take long. Latitude lines don't move. I mean, as the Earth spins around,
that's
the latitude
right.
line stays the same.
That's
so
right.
for remote viewers, it's pretty easy to sense north or south of a given line when we use our terrain index reference system. But longitude is more difficult and takes at least twice as much work. It would take, for instance, about a day and a half, sometimes 2 days, to work out longitude.
Well, I recall when you made that prediction, as well as a couple of others, you said that you're going to start really sticking your neck out in order to prove to the world that remote viewing is real.
Art, that's not the reason I'm doing it.
Well, that's what you said.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the reason that we picked that venue is to attempt to save lives, and we're getting better as we get better and more precise in these predictions, for instance.
Well, and also prove remote viewing is real. I mean, that's got to be a major goal. Come on.
I suppose that is one.
Well, sure it is. I mean, why else would you make a gigantic public prediction about an event as large as that earthquake or what you've got that we'll talk about here on the webpage now? I mean, save lives, yes, I'm sure, but also from your point of view, to validate remote viewing in the eyes of the public.
Actually, the gold project that we have, Art, I mentioned that if you have a little bit more patience, we're bringing you some gold from a treasure trove. That, I think, is more telling about the efficacy and the validity of remote viewing. People really perk up when they see gold rather than events.
I know. I perk up when I see gold.
Yeah.
So what do you mean you're bringing me gold? So you're going to bring gold to me, large amounts of it, and just leave it for me, right?
No. We're going to have
no?
a photo op with you, Art. And,
a photo op.
Leave a little bit with you, but no, we're going to use it to good stead.
But Ed, I really need it all to examine it slowly over the years and determine the validity of your claim.
I'm sure that's the case, Art.
So when
maybe a doubloon or so.
When, Ed? When will the gold show?
It should be no later than June. We just came out of the field on a child search, and we're back in the field next week on a child search.
Well, Ed, that's my birthday, June. So it's a birthday present then.
What day?
Think
what
of it that
day,
way.
Art?
June 17th.
June 17th.
June 17th would be a wonderful day.
All right, my friend. We'll shoot for June 17th for our gold delivery.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm serious. That packs a lot more punch than to people because it...
No, it doesn't. Look, hits are what pack punch. When you get a hit, like with the earthquake, yeah, people take notice. They start listening harder, whether they like you or not. You know, a lot of people don't like you, Ed.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know. Yes.
Why do you think that is? I mean, it's not just simple dislike, Ed. It's passionate, deep, throbbing dislike.
When I used to brief at the old executive office of the White House, I mentioned this before, the staffers, the White House staffers, were tired of hearing about Russian megatonnage and throwaweight in terms of nuclear weapons. But when I briefed on extremely exotic, futuristic weapons that were very painful and would kill you, and not vaporize you, but kill you very slowly and extremely painfully.
Huh.
And they did not like to hear that.
Me either.
So they loathe my appearance at briefings.
I think that it's, well, I mean, this is like a briefing when you come on the program and you sort of lay out, well, I mean, you have to admit, you do somewhat, well, you're like our national newscasts, really. You tend to dwell on the negative, but it's the nature, I guess, of remote viewing and event viewing. And it's the nature of humanity to be interested in the negative stuff. That's why the newscast put it on. That's why people watch it.
Well, I'm very human as well. I'm a very warm human being, too. And I'm going to tell you some things tonight that are warm.
Warm, really? Warm for Ed means, you know, only 5,000 die.
So, for instance, with the next use of a nuclear weapon that I've been forecasting for years.
There's a nice warm area to begin, yes.
Right. Now, on that, on something like where human decision, the vicissitudes of human minds are involved in varying conditions.
Yes.
It is easy to see the event for remote viewers. In fact, any trained remote viewer can see this next use of a nuclear weapon, and won't take long for even an intermediate skilled viewer to determine where that is. But
you've been saying this so long, Ed. When do you suppose, I know that's the trick question, but how close are we getting?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting into now.
Okay.
Now, geophysical events, earthquakes and the volcano that I'm forecasting for New Zealand, those kinds of things, humans aren't involved in that. And apparently, we know this empirically as remote viewers, now that we can place dates closer to events, if not right on them, soon. It's far easier to do that for a geophysical, natural disaster or catastrophe than it is for a man-made catastrophe. So in the case of this next use of a nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula,
yes,
we may not be able to get that close because humans are involved in the decision-making process, but we're going to give it a shot anyway. In fact, we're working on that now, as well as the beginning of the kill shot, this very serious.
I want to cover all of these. Let's specifically cover the Mount Tauroa eruption. What is it you see is going to happen, where and when?
Okay, now the reason that this one is easier to do than, in this case, we're looking at a next major global catastrophe as remote viewers in terms of forecasting.
Okay.
In the case of the earthquake in March, which took over 1,000 lives, 1,000 souls, that, by the way, is really our MO in this. That event was very difficult to pin down because we're looking at an underwater, undersea event. We're actually sketching the shelves moving.
Right.
Now we have no way to know where we are. We know that the event is an earthquake and shelves are moving, but when we pop up above the surface of the water, figuratively speaking, and we attempt to look for the nearest significant feature that we always do as remote viewers to get a fix on where we are globally.
Right.
The area in Indonesia is so homogeneous, particularly where the earthquake occurred. It's so homogeneous that everything looks the same. So even when we sketch the nearest unique features, it's very difficult to pinpoint where we are in Asia. So we had to go with just the geofix techniques and the geofix positions. In the case of this next event, which happens to be not an earthquake but a volcano, mm-hmm. an extremely powerful, dangerous eruption, very, very powerful, an eruption that we've sketched that is potentially very deadly to the people that live there. In fact, the last time this mountain erupted, the last time this area erupted, it took 150 people with it. This time, the potential is much larger in terms of death.
All right,
but the volcano itself is so unique in terms of its geomorphology and the way it appears to the eye that when I sketch it, it's very easy to go to all the volcanoes in New Zealand, because that's where our new techniques took us, and match up the sketch with that particular mountain. Very easy indeed.
All right, so let's nail it down. Not everybody has the web. You're predicting an eruption on?
In the month of November, highly likely in the month of November 2005.
This year?
Yes, this year.
Mount Tararua, is it?
It's Tararua.
Tararua. Okay. Tararua. And this, it'll
this is
be.
On New Zealand's central North Island.
All right.
Last time it erupted in 1886, it killed 150 people.
And this time?
The potential is much larger. That's why I'm going on the air with this and sticking my.
Is there a way that you can compare the size of this predicted eruption with, say, Pinatubo?
Oh, I would say it is as large or more. It looks like it's more violent than Pinatubo.
Okay.
Very much more violent.
All right. Then that one is duly recorded. And, you know, do you think that word, I mean, it's a long time now, relatively anyway, between now and November, that word will make it to the area, that anybody will act on this prediction?
Yeah. I think a few people will take vacations that live on that plateau. I really do. I have friends in the area that live in the area as well, too, so I'll make sure they're out of there. But the word will travel.
All right.
Your show makes it, coast to coast is heard in New Zealand.
It certainly is. All right, so that's a big one, and it is recorded. Now, regarding the next use of a nuke, for years you've been saying that on the Korean Peninsula, and you still think it will be on the Korean Peninsula. You haven't changed that, have you?
No, not at all, because that, again, was not that difficult to establish. At the time, though, next, when's next? We did not have the tools or the techniques or the evolved methods to really do anything in terms of next. But,
okay, well, what do you know now?
Nothing yet. But by this time, I'd say a month from now, we'll know. We'll be close. But do you really want to know is the question. Do you really want, for instance,
well, I don't know.
They just dropped out of talks with the Chinese.
Do you really want, well, they did, I know. Do you really want to tell? It's not so much whether I want to know. You know, I'm not that curious, for example, about my own future. I wouldn't really want to know. However, for the sake of your credibility, I would think that if you know, you should tell. Yes.
Yeah, I'll give it some thought, but we are going to tag a date onto that, and I'll tell you what: if it's this year, and if it's before a geophysical, if this man-made catastrophe happens to pop up on our timeline before the next geophysical catastrophe, I will call you personally, and then we can talk about it.
All right, Ed does do that, by the way, from time to time. He calls me personally with information. Very interesting stuff, and I appreciate those calls, Ed. All right. Last week, and for a long time now, I've done something that some people scoff at, and others are kind of with me, and they think this electronic voice phenomena business is really interesting. I mean, you look at it, you can't find holes in it, you can't find any reason for it to be faked. It doesn't sound fake, frankly. It sounds like the real McCoy. I've looked very hard at it, Ed, and that's why I've had guests again and again and again with this electronic voice phenomena, because, by God, I think there really is something to it. And I know, I guess, you've looked at EVP both in a specific and general way for us tonight. Is that correct?
I actually have some experience with it. I integrated it tangentially into a very classified project during the Cold War in 1981. I can't talk about the project, but my experience with it, I can talk about.
Why can't you talk about it? It's classified.
Because it would embarrass the United States government.
Well, so who cares?
Well, because it's still classified, the project, and even though it didn't go down and work, the project itself, the EVP part, did, and that's what I wanted to talk about.
I'm wondering what interest would the U.S. government have?
I can't even mention the
EVP.
Topic, to tell you the truth. Even the topic is...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, now that's going to have me thinking for a while. What interest would the U.S. government have in EVP? That would be in getting the voices of those who have passed.
That's correct.
Wow. That's just the fact they were interested.
Well, let me just drop a hint.
Please.
In a moment, I'm going to dispel. We're going to talk about voices of those who passed. But
yes.
Let's say that it were possible, and wouldn't you want to have a dialogue with, let's say, the former head of the KGB, Andropov?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I would too.
So that's sort of a hint. In other words,
right.
Who would the government be interested in having a conversation with?
Well, he's not home anymore, so what the heck?
Yeah. All right, Ed, hold on. Major Ed Ames, Dr. Doom, his affectionate title, is my guest. Let's see, who would the government most like to talk to? Somebody who has died. That's worth a little thought, isn't it? And were they officially interested, according to Ed? Yes. Oh, this program is so interesting, isn't it? EVP is a subject we're about to be talking about, electronic voice phenomena, the subject of last week's show that stirred so much controversy in the nighttime. I'm Art Bell.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and you got to really wonder in the private world of Major Ed Dames, when he predicts an earthquake's going to occur, a big one, and then when that earthquake does occur, as happened just weeks ago, When it really does occur, what do you think, in private, Major Ed Dames does? Does he go, oh my God, all those people did die? Or does he go, yes? We may never know the answer to that one.
It's Iron.
I really am pretty well convinced of the credibility of those who do EVP, of the EVP phenomena itself. In fact, Halloween, I got hold of these incredible historical Spiricom tapes, the work that George Meeks was involved in, published the technical details of how to produce the tones that allegedly are used by people on the other side to modulate and therefore communicate in an ongoing, and that's what I played. It was, I don't know, at least 40 minutes long, as I recall. Hard to hear in some places, but in the end, if you digested and listened carefully, it would raise the hair on the back of your neck. I guarantee it was an ongoing, real-time communication with the dead. And it was incredible. God, it was incredible to listen to. And it's just sort of been the latest chapter in my interest in electronic voice phenomena. And Ed's ready to comment on some of it tonight. It says, EVP, RV findings on the origin of the child's voice recorded on last Saturday's show. You may recall last Saturday we had a child's voice which seemed to be the voice of a child drowning. Ed says, warning, extremely disturbing. Comments on the phenomena itself as well. So, Ed, apparently that was interesting enough to launch you into an investigation of EVP or what?
It was haunting.
Yeah, it was haunting, for sure.
Even for someone like myself who's familiar with EVP and a lot of other phenomenological things. But this one was haunting, and it caught me by surprise. Also, I'm going to bring up the fact that the sound of water is not the voice of the dead. And we're going to talk about some of that in a moment, too. But I want to hark back, if I may, to my own experience with EVP in 1981, when it was tangentially part of this classified project. I was listening to a white noise generator, and I was getting pretty bored and starting to fall asleep. And the first time I heard a voice, I almost jumped out of my skin. This is the first time ever. I just came right out of my skin.
While you were in the military?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was Mr. Enigma, don't forget, in the Army, and then later for Office of Secretary of Defense. So I wore a very strange hat in the government.
White noise, folks, is very interesting. White noise is just... Here, I think that I can cause some. That's white noise, folks. That's white noise. And it's a sort of a combination of all noises. And so it would be a particularly interesting vehicle to produce, to allow some entity or whatever it is, and I'm sure Ed's about to talk to that, to take portions of it and modulate it and create what sounds like a voice. Yes?
Pretty close. Yeah, pretty close. Actually, I was using a detuned radio. It's pretty basic.
Okay.
Tuned to just nothing. And I was right on the verge of wakefulness and sleep because that white noise is pretty boring. And jejune, but when I heard something that sounded like a voice, I mean, the hair on my back just stood right up. So I thought, okay, that's just because I was falling asleep and imagination, and then I heard it again. And then I hit the switch on that thing and turned that radio off.
Can you recall, were they distinct words? Did you hear it actually say anything?
I can't remember, to be honest with you, at that time. My subsequent work with it, yes, there were distinct voices. Three separate voices.
Do you ever recall it actually speaking a word that you remember?
No, I don't. I was so nonplussed by the experience that I wanted to forget it really quickly. It spooked me. It spooked me bad. Even though I was using it, employing it in this operation, my attempt there was to validate, establish the legitimacy of the phenomenon so that we could use it to support this operation. Now, at that point, I was a little bit questioning whether or not I should have done that. But anyway, that was my entree into the field. Now, there's no microphone that's involved here. The microphones that researchers use are just so I think the public can hear, so other researchers can hear what's going on in the local environment. But all you need is an RF oscillator and some audio output It could be a tape recorder. It could be
headphone. I sure might buy that. Sure.
Yeah. So, because the dead, if it's the dead, and usually it is, they don't have a mouth, right? So they can't use a mouth. The dead have. So it's not the dead's voice. It's not a sonic phenomenon. It's electromagnetic in nature. Very similar to ghosts and apparitions. When an apparition passes through you, through your body, when a ghost passes through you,
yes,
you feel your body react because you have an electromagnetic field, charged field, going through your body.
Huh.
In a very similar fashion, these EVPs are, they're sort of vestigial EM patterns that are left behind, but they're not living, and that's an important point.
Okay, but I'm not sure that it's an absolute point, because how do you account for the many times where absolute, or the Spiricom experiments, or the many times where the information is quite contemporary and reactive, or obviously reactive, to what the experimenter is saying?
I can't. So I want to throw the hypothesis, because that's what it was, or postulate, actually, out the window. And I'm going to do that forever because of what we found out using remote viewing to research the origin of this child's voice. It changed everything I thought about.
So in other words, after last week's program, I admit what was played was extremely, extremely disturbing. I got more emails on it, Ed, you just wouldn't believe.
Art, it's going to get more disturbing in a moment. It's going to get more disturbing in a moment. Because let me talk about the minor thing first.
All right.
And that's the sound of the water. Now, that's not a voice. Even if we're talking about a voice or a disincarnate entity, that water is not a living person.
Right.
Or a dead person. So
right.
How does that get on electromagnetically reproduced? What modulates that?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
A concept, an idea, a memory? I don't know, Ed.
I think a memory is the closest that we've come to in order to establish some element in terms of modeling the mechanics and the dynamics of this. But what I'm about to say leads me to think that there's no way that the best of my professionals and I can model this because of what we found out in terms of the child's voice.
All right, might as well do it. What did you find out?
Brendan and Cook and Barbara McBeath were in this mental hospital recording.
Yes.
Right. And even they admit it's the strangest thing they've ever recorded, right?
Right.
And here's this child. There's the sound of apparently what sound, of course, appearances can be deceiving, but it sounds like a child's voice. A young child can be heard saying, "Help me, I can't breathe, I couldn't breathe." And then you hear the rest of the recording, which I'm sure many of your listeners listen to.
Oh, yes.
Pretty captivating. The child, this event, and this is where people need to leave the room if they're not ready for it. This is not a child. It's a fetus being aborted.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to go into the details about the abortion itself, the barbaric way in which it was handled. Obviously, you know, we've got water involved after the fetus was removed from the mother.
Oh, God.
But how in the world, I mean, in terms of eschatology deals with, it's a branch of theology that deals with death and the afterlife and finality. How do you explain how a fetus, through time, can ideationally can come up and somehow impart the ideas and the English words, "I can't breathe, help me, I couldn't breathe," electromagnetically onto something? I mean,
do you have any thought? Do you have any ideas?
No, I don't.
I sure don't either.
I'm pretty much familiar with lots of aspects of the phenomenological world and have researched a lot of it, but this one, Art, it throws a monkey wrench in everything, all the comfort level that I ever had about reality.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing has thrown a monkey wrench into a lot of things, I believe, too. And, you know, I didn't really want to believe the whole EVP thing, but I'm afraid that I do, Ed. I've looked for holes in it. I've looked for ulterior motives. I've looked carefully at the Spiricom stuff. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to do that, but my God, that's convincing.
Stuff way back when I was investigating this. But how are this is a horse of a different color. How in the world, when remote viewing is one of the key points here, one of the real powerful techniques and methods is to establish connectivity. How do you reconcile the idea of a fetus being able to talk?
I don't.
Being able to even communicate electromagnetically using English words that only a living child could know or an adult. I can't do that. I don't know what to do with that.
Could this have been somehow projected by any of the other participants in the incident?
The other participants we sketched a man, evidently a doctor, sketched a mother, we sketched an assistant, and the rest I'm not going to go into because it was very gruesome and it was very disturbing.
Well, now that just made that all the more disturbing. God, that's awful. All right, so you looked more generally at the whole phenomena of these voices manifesting in audio, manifesting in white noise, manifesting in the carefully planned George Meeks experiments, or just what my friends up in Utah get. What is it, Ed, that we're hearing? I mean, are we...
I think what is happening, you've got, there's something behind. First of all, we got an electromagnetic field. Second of all, we've got some aspect of mind behind the electromagnetic field in order to modulate it, okay? Where's the mind, though? Where is the information stored? How is it transmitted? What's the connection between the recorder and the sender, if any? And these are really questions that we may or may not be able to answer using remote viewing to establish connectivity, because we may be dealing with something like the afterlife or the global mind, and we can't get into the operating system because it's what we use to do our work.
Hey, Ed, here's something that you might want to look at. I've got an 8-page article here, and the title of the article is by Christian Gravel, and it's called Do Man-Made Electromagnetic Fields Influence Human Consciousness? And it's a totally fascinating article, and in some way, certainly, EMF fields probably do or could conceivably influence consciousness, or the other way around.
Yeah, I was involved in the classified side of that for many, many years. That's one of the hats I wore in terms of science and technology. Intelligence Officer Niemer, it's called, non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation.
Uh-huh.
How do you weaponize that? Well, we reached a point where if you were at a good distance away, we could point a machine at you and modulate it the right way, and on-off control, have you drop a cup of coffee and not know what happened to you. Now, this is non-ionizing radiation, which means that the RF is so low that it doesn't heat up water more than 0.1 degrees, and I won't go into all the technical stuff, but it's not ionizing. It doesn't strip electrons away from the nuclei of atoms. It isn't powerful, but it's about as powerful as your cell phone. And what I'm saying is that if you modulate the RF the right way, just the right way, so that it's in sync with your nervous system, and I won't go into any technical details, out you go. Now, you have to turn this back off. You have to turn this off if you use it against a human being, because a human won't be able to breathe. Their body, their nervous system won't work. So if you're pointing a weapon, let's say, hypothetical weapon, at someone, you can't keep it on without killing them, because you're scrambling their nervous system.
Uh-huh.
So it's influencing their nervous system.
What about the effect on the user of the device?
They have to be shielded, just like any other, like a high powered microwave device or just regular microwave devices. You have to be fairly shielded. You have to a copper RF suit or behind a shield.
Huh.
It's not as powerful as X-rays, but you still have to be shielded.
Mm-hmm.
Or you will undergo the effects themselves.
So anyway, you think there could be a connection between consciousness, you know, the Princeton experiments, for example, and electromagnetic radiation and that they could have an effect on each other?
I tell you what we found in our work, because my sister science and remote viewing sister science is psychokinesis or telekinesis. What we found is that the way that, for instance, the way that the audience under my direction a year or so ago influenced one of the clocks in your office, right there, you remember that, I'm sure.
Yes.
What was it's more the magnetic field in sync with the mind than it is the electronic vector. It's more the magnetic vector than the electrical vector in the electromagnetic wave that's being affected, and it's also gravity. So there is, when I say gravity in terms of its linkage with the magnetic field, it's the gravity part that actually causes things to move or lift or slow down, as in the case of your clock. So mind is definitely somehow, there is definitely an electromagnetic factor component, or it's the field itself that's being influenced and or influencing. But this doesn't explain the faster than light speed at which remote viewing works. So it's something behind the idea of the electromagnetic field, and we haven't gotten to the point where we understand what it is yet. One noteworthy thing I might point out, however,
yes,
in the case of the Princeton experiment, what we did with using them as a jump-off point, there is a particular metal that very interestingly is far more susceptible to psychokinetic effects than other metals.
Huh.
And that was very strange. So maybe the electronic structure of that has something to do with the, maybe by studying that we can gain some more insight.
Well, all of this probably is going to end up at the quantum level somehow or another. It's almost the only way you can explain the faster-than-light reaction. The quantum, you know, this thing of two objects worlds apart feeling or doing the same thing at exactly the same time. That's sort of a quantum effect, isn't it, Ed?
The effects are very similar. Whether or not the quantum theory is explaining what's going on, I do not know. I mean, quantum theory is thrown around pretty loosely these days.
Well, it is, but I mean, two molecules doing the same thing at the same time, no matter how far separated they are.
Well, what we found out is that in terms of using human DNA, remember, I think it was like 7 years ago on your show, I talked about the CIA experiments trying to develop the Psi switch, where an agent who would get caught with, let's say, a radio transmitter in the heel of their boot or something like that, or in their watch.
Yes.
It's a pretty damning thing. So why not use your mind to flip a switch somewhere and communicate using your mind? And
well, absolutely. Nothing to find in the boot. All right, hold on, Ed. We're at the top of yet another hour. It's amazing how time flies. Major Ed Dames, otherwise officially known as Dr. Doom, is my guest. It's already quite a night. So that was an abortion. My God. That makes it all that much worse. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.